hundreds, if not thousands, of people that want to meet with you. So I figured we could. The deal was, let's keep it quick,
okay.
Short and brief.
Okay.
Talk a bit about, you know, I sent over the questions and let's
mm-hmm.
stick to those.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, you know, after the holidays, early in the new year, we could maybe get together, have an informal discussion off the record about some of the kind of deeper policy challenges you're facing.
Yeah.
Does
I
that
love
sound?
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Good with you?
Sure.
Okay. So, there was one, Matt, I said we'd stick to these questions, but
mm-hmm.
I want to ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Given Representative Thiessen bringing up this whole
mm-hmm.
reorg this week, could I just briefly at the end just ask about that? Would that be acceptable?
Mm.
I mean, I think that...
I can...
I just want to just briefly touch upon it, since that was in the news this week.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Do you have the statement that we provided from Emily? Yeah, and it'd probably be along those lines.
I do.
So.
I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine, but I just feel like
okay.
it's just something I want to get in there since it's timely. Not that your appointment is not timely enough, but and again, thank you for doing this. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, when do you move over to the new?
On Monday.
Monday,
wow. Yeah, I'm starting to pack up, and this afternoon, working more closely with the gal who's taking my place, who is Kimberly Slay Holmes, who's phenomenal.
Okay.
She's an assistant commissioner at the Department of Revenue, and so I'm working on the transition process with her
okay.
and already setting up meetings for next week and later on this week at
okay.
the Department of Human Services.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, well, we should get to know each other more. My background,
yeah.
a little briefly, is I've been at the paper kind of on and off for the
mm-hmm.
past decade. I left for a couple years, became a union organizer, so I have certain sympathies with workers,
yeah.
and came back 2 years ago and basically have been covering, you know, social services ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And broadly speaking, I cover not just DHS, but social services in general. So I write about poverty programs,
mm-hmm.
programs for people with mental illness and disabilities.
What
but
percentage would you say touches the work of the department of what you write on? Because I'm most familiar with that work.
I'd say about half.
Okay.
Yeah, even when we do, you know, when we do stories about local programs, you know, I did a story about a great program last year about an effort at Hennepin County to
mm-hmm.
try to reduce addictions for children born with, you know, heroin
mm-hmm.
in their system, with drugs
mm-hmm.
in their system, and they have a great program for that.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, you end up touching upon
yeah.
what DHS is doing. You
mm-hmm.
just can't avoid it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was this program that was 99% effective in, you know, producing drug-free children,
mm-hmm.
you know, this counseling program. So, you know, one misconception is that we're not interested in solutions. We are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where you all have good ideas, we want to hear about them.
Yeah.
We don't just want to write about gaps and problems and
mm-hmm.
and so on. So, anyway. Mm-hmm. But we can talk more about that later.
Okay.
So why are you interested in the job? I mean, this is widely viewed as, you know, one of the most difficult jobs in state governments. So
mm-hmm.
why'd you take it?
Well, when I committed myself to public service professionally in 2011, when I went to work for the Commerce Department and
mm-hmm.
Commissioner Rothman, I did so because I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. I was committed to the administration. I was commissioner
mm-hmm.
to Governor, or I was committed to Governor Dayton and his values and his work trying to improve how state government provides services to the people of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really saw that as an opportunity to move in and really make a difference. And in every step that I've made through state government since then, that's been my guiding principle. How can I do the most I can to impact people's lives in a positive way?
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of no
sure.
better way to do that than by helping, you know, serve those most vulnerable in our population. And so that's really what guided me
mm-hmm.
in seeking to be Commissioner of Human Services. And I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So this is basically a continuation of what wanted, you know, the same goals and ambitions that you had when you took the 2011
mm-hmm.
job. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wanting to have an impact?
Mm-hmm. It's a commitment to public service. It's, you know, it's a commitment to trying to work to make government work better for the people that we serve.
What do you see as the most significant challenges in that position?
Well,
I mean, touch upon maybe, you know, one or two that you see as, well, there's a lot of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Given the complexity of the populations you serve, but...
Are you most interested in the most immediate challenges or the challenges that I see?
Big picture, over the next 3 years.
Well, I think that healthcare financing is going to be a significant challenge. And I know that the Healthcare Financing Task Force is doing great work. The work groups are working very hard. I've spoken with several members of the Healthcare Financing Task Force since the governor announced my appointment. And I am so looking forward to and excited to work with them. They all, the people that I speak with that are working on this issue are so committed and smart and are working hard to come up with some real recommendations. And so that is something that I think is going to be an immediate focus and challenge for me. I've been, you know, engaged peripherally on the Healthcare Financing Task Force, but I'll be chairing it or co-chairing it starting in with my first meeting next Friday. So that'll be a challenge, getting the recommendations done in January, but then that is just the beginning of the next several years of conversation around what those recommendations mean for long-term financing in Minnesota.
For those who might not be familiar with that issue, why is it such a huge challenge, long-term healthcare financing?
Well, I think that the governor and the legislature recognized that it was a big challenge, and that's why they created the task force. You know, I think that it's such a big challenge because we have the, you know, the provider tax and potentially sunsetting. We have rising costs of healthcare. We have growing needs of populations being served, and we have just a really dynamic marketplace as healthcare reform continues to be implemented in our state and nationally. And so I commend the legislature and the governor's acknowledgement and recognition of the importance of the work in forming this task force, and just the outstanding appointments to the task force bring some of the best minds in healthcare around the table to come up with Minnesota-based solutions.
Yeah, I know your previous commissioner, the person who had this position position before you, had raised concerns about the growing cost of healthcare and medical assistance, in essence, kind of taking up so much of the budget that it could end up, you know, affecting other programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, you look at the spending, it's just gone, you know, skyrocketed. Is that one of the concerns?
I think it's always a concern. I think it's one of many concerns. I think that, I mean, fundamentally, I think we're on the right track. We have more people with health insurance than we ever have in our state before. And I think that is a really great benchmark of the success of the Affordable Care Act.
Absolutely.
But we do have these challenges with the growing cost of healthcare and the impact it has on the average person, their pocket, but not only the cost of government and that expense, but the cost to the people of Minnesota who are paying a lot of money for health, an increasing amount of their budget for healthcare. And, you know, we saw recently, was that today, that 70% of people going through MNsure are tax credit eligible. And, I mean, that just speaks to the need to provide support for people's budget as healthcare costs grow.
Tax credit eligible, in other words,
they're eligible
they're
for, they're, well, they're the, they are not, they exceed the income threshold for Minnesota Care or MA, but they are eligible for the federal tax credit, so they're 275 to 400% of the federal poverty level.
Oh, I see.
So, like the way that the health insurance exchange works is people can go through the health insurance exchange and do their eligibility, including the eligibility for the federal tax credits.
Interesting. The significance of that 70% figure, sorry, for is what?
Well, I think it's just an example of the need that the average Minnesotan has to receive help because healthcare costs are growing so significantly.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Beyond the rising healthcare costs, long-term financing of that, any other major challenges you want to point out?
So I think that there are challenges and there are opportunities, and I'd like to speak to the challenges in this question.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Not forgetting that I also have a very opportunity focused agenda as I take my role in, as Commissioner of Human Services. So, a couple
good.
Other challenges I see are direct care and treatment and our administration of direct care and treatment in the state of Minnesota. Particularly, I'm focused on St. Peter and Anoka Regional Treatment Center, and I've been involved in the governor's office on those issues and sort of systemic problems that are facing direct care and treatment at the Department of Human Services. And so that's one area that I see as an immediate challenge.
Can you touch upon what it is about that area that is an immediate challenge? Would it be, you know, the shortage of beds, the need to bring safety issues under control? I mean, just broadly speaking, what would be the significant challenge there?
I mean, it's a systemic challenge to serve the population that is one of the most difficult to serve. And so it's all of those things. It's making sure that people, when they go to work, have a safe place to go to work, making sure that people that are committed to our facilities receive treatment in a therapeutic environment. It's managing the appropriate staffing levels and having funding for the appropriate staffing levels and having adequate and appropriate staff to provide for the therapeutic and treatment-based environment. It's systemic, as you touched on, it's the impact of the 48-hour rule. It is the impact the 48-hour rule is having on Anoka Regional Treatment Center and the issues then upstream from Anoka with patients at Anoka who perhaps should be placed elsewhere, that there's nowhere else for them to go. And so it's systemic in some. In some ways, it's very systemic across our whole treatment system, but I think we not only need to look at the systemic issues long-term, but we also need to talk and tackle these really functional issues we're having with our facilities specifically.
Absolutely. Well, that's really great to hear. I mean, social services strikes me as this unusual area where if you change one thing, it's like a tapestry. You pull on one thread, it affects the whole fabric of everything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone anticipated kind of the impact of the 48-hour rule at the time,
mm-hmm.
That it would cause such an effect, you know, in Anoka Metro and St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just me editorializing. I'm just saying that
mm-hmm.
it just seems like it's that kind of, that's one of the challenges too, is that you can change something over here,
mm-hmm.
make a change here, and it's going to affect something else down the line, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and segueing into another area where I see that effect and something that I know that we're going to need to address immediately is not only reviewing what improvements we've made to our child protection system and how they've been implemented across counties throughout the state, but then, as has been recently reported, looking at the upstream impacts to our foster care system and how we can better serve the kids and families in our foster care system, understanding not only that the reforms to the child protection system have put great pressure on foster care, but also looking at other ways to improve, use it as an opportunity to look at other ways to improve how we provide foster care to our most vulnerable kids.
Another big area. Right?
I'm sorry?
Another big area.
Big area.
Right.
There are no small problems at the Department of Human Services, so I fully acknowledge that that to be the case.
Right. It is complicated. At the press conference, you talked about one of your passions is improving the lives of people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a bit about where this passion comes from?
Well, I was thinking about Hubert Humphrey and what his famous quote on people and the moral responsibility of government. And I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Repeat it for me. I actually am not.
The moral test of government is how that government treats those who are in the dawn of life, the children, those who are in the twilight of life, the elderly, and those who are in the shadows of life, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped. And
That's a great quote.
I can think of, as a servant leader, I take the moral responsibility of government to mean the moral responsibility of me as a leader. And this is the core of why I care about what I'm doing and why I care about who I care about, including people with disabilities, because it's my moral responsibility as a servant leader to always have that at the front of my mind. So
you're taking it personally.
It's very personal to me, and it's something that I come from a family of public service, and I don't know if you're familiar with my background, but
a little bit. Your mom and your grandmother.
My mom and my grandma, and my dad was a Minneapolis police officer and then a United States Postal Inspector. He's an attorney now. My brother-in-law is a police officer. My husband is a fireman. My grandpa, who died when he was 39 of lung cancer, leaving my grandma a widow, was a fireman. My grandma's sister was in the state legislature. My aunt is on the now then city council. I have a real...
And your mom on the city council in Minneapolis.
Correct.
And your grandmother also.
First woman president of the Minneapolis City Council.
Oh, is that right? Okay,
yep.
I didn't know that.
And
okay.
Actually, she, interestingly... she is the person, she was mother of seven, my mom's the oldest of seven children, and my grandma was very involved in community and politics and stuff like that when my grandpa was alive, when he was a fireman for the city of Minneapolis, but he died of lung cancer when he was 39, and my mom was the oldest of the seven kids, I think she was 18,
wow.
And my youngest aunt was in kindergarten, and then she had the five kids in between, and she... then had this amazing career where she not only raised seven wonderful kids, all who are very committed to their community, two public school teachers, my mother and her sister who's on the now then city council, another aunt who's a nurse. She raised this wonderful family,
mm-hmm.
and also was such a pioneer for
mm-hmm.
women.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so
About your mother.
My grandma.
Your grandmother,
yeah.
Right, your grandmother. Okay.
She was very much the matriarch of my family. She passed away, but she very much was the rock of our, and is the rock of our family.
Right.
And so it was through her that from the time I, you know, was old enough to understand that it was instilled in me the social responsibility to spend your time giving back. And that's what I try and do. I try and do that personally, in my personal life, and professionally, in my work with the state.
Maybe it's something about big families.
I'm
from a family of eight, and it's certainly true that anytime you have that many siblings, you tend to have a kind of a powerful mother. You know, it's almost you almost have to, I think.
You know, it's
but
interesting.
They've all, you know, in various roles, they've all my siblings, except for me, have gone into kind of government, kind of public service roles.
Well, you're public, I mean, you play an instrumental part in serving the public in your role. I mean, your series on people with disabilities, that was so powerful. It just shines a light on, in a really necessary way about how we need to do more for those most vulnerable.
That's a good segue. I sort of view it differently in the sense that, you know, we describe things.
Mm-hmm.
Journalists, we describe, and it's up to smarter people to actually change things. It's far easier to describe than to change.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good segue about the disabilities. So it was kind of from your upbringing that you developed this passion, right?
Mm-hmm. The other thing,
sure.
my grandma. So
sure.
She died of dementia, Lewy body dementia in 2009. And before she died,
mm-hmm.
we as a family really, we became then her caretakers. And, you know, my sisters and my mother and one of my aunts all lived very close to her. And we
mm-hmm.
would rotate sleeping at her house and caring for her to keep her in her home. And so with my grandma, I see sort of like the full spectrum of somebody's life and how the caretaker then becomes the cared for and
mm-hmm.
how important it is for all of us you know, to remember that at some point, even if we're the caretaker now, we're going to be the cared for in the future. So that
Absolutely.
Was another thing that
no, that's
my
really
grand
powerful.
my relationship with my grandma really reflecting on it.
Right. So. Right. That's really powerful to point that out. So on this issue of your passion for disabilities,
mm-hmm.
anything in particular that, you know, you want to do that would change things for people's lives in Minnesota that would make it better for them?
Well, you know, when I started in the governor's office, we had had an Olmstead plan that had been submitted to a federal court several times and been
right.
rejected, provisionally accepted, rejected.
Right.
And I very much felt like we needed to shore up what we were doing on our work specific to Olmstead in the short term, not only to support the people that needed the services, but also to give the court confidence that we were moving in the right direction as a state. And so I've worked really closely with Commissioner Tingerthal in the state
mm-hmm.
Olmstead sub-cabinet around building an Olmstead plan that has measurable, specific goals.
Right.
So not only are we describing what our goals are, but we're benchmarking our success and tracking our success and where there are opportunities to see improvements. And the work of, you know, the plan is approved, the work plans have been approved, and now the rubber meets the road on state implementing all of the work plans. That said,
right.
I very much feel like now is an opportunity that work continues, that we always need to keep our eye on the ball on how we can improve services and be innovative in how we provide services to people with disabilities.
Right.
And I think it's often too easy to get drawn into the work of the day and the work of the work plan
mm.
without
mm.
And lose the opportunity or lose the focus of what, at the end of the day, are we trying to do here? And
right.
it's your series really sort of brought that home for the people across state government that are working on the Olmstead plan. And
okay.
I'm looking forward on the sub-cabinet to, because I will serve on the sub-cabinet now, to maintaining that vision and maintaining the conversation at the higher level about how we are in it, how we can innovate and how we can structure programs, structure services to better serve the people of Minnesota with disabilities.
Well, you know, I'm biased because we did a series on this topic, but this is refreshing to hear, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're looking to take Olmstead really seriously. I think there's like over 40 states have these Olmstead plans, and there's
mm-hmm.
been concern that states have developed some of these plans and put them on a shelf and
mm-hmm.
kind of forgotten about them.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you're not going to let that happen.
Well, I'm going to attend my first Olmstead subcabinet meeting next Friday morning as a member of the subcabinet, and it's at that meeting where we will start to see, we will receive direct reporting on where our agencies are at in
okay.
implementing their work plans. And I'm confident that with Commissioner Tingerthal's leadership, that the Olmstead subcabinet will be a strong way to oversee our implementation and an ongoing way to oversee our implementation of the Olmstead plan. I actually see the sub-cabinet as a very effective tool to make sure that that doesn't happen, that people don't put the plan on the shelf, that
okay.
we are constantly bringing back the people implementing the work plans and asking for accountability.
Okay. So you want real action?
I do.
Okay. Couple last things. Could you talk a bit about your background and what it is you think has best prepared you for this assignment?
Well, I think first and foremost it's my commitment to public service, which we've talked a lot, you know,
right.
talked about. And it's public service not only in my professional life, but in my personal life as well. I also think that my background in a state agency at the Commerce Department, working on health reform, working on many of the issues that have direct relationship to the Department of Human Services around health reform, I
sure.
think is going to be very useful and serve me well in my new position as Human Services Commissioner. You know, I was thinking the other area that my experience at the Commerce Department is going to be very useful for
mm-hmm.
me in my role as Human Services Commissioner is I was Chief of Staff at the Commerce Department.
Mm-hmm.
And although it's a much smaller agency, like Human Services, the Commissioner of Commerce wears many hats. He regulates over 20 different industries. And so Human Services is very diverse in the work that it does. And although a smaller scale, the Commerce Department was as well. And so
right.
I am used to having to manage different issues in very different areas.
Right, right.
So, I think my training as a lawyer with all the complex legal issues that constantly face the Department of Human Services, the state sex offender program, you know, our waivered services, all of the lawsuits and the litigation and the legal issues, my training, my professional training and my experience being the governor's lawyer and working on those issues is going to be a very, very big advantage for me stepping in as Human Services Commissioner.
Great, great. A number of DHS observers over the years have said that the agency is simply too big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe it should be broken up, kind of like the big banks, and, you know, broken up into pieces so it could be more manageable. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well,
we had the Representative Thiessen
proposal. Specific to Representative
yeah.
Thiessen's proposal, I'm open to conversations about how we can reform state government to make it work better for the people that we serve. And so I'm very interested in engaging Representative Thiessen, Representative Dean, and others that have the legislative leadership that have spoken out on that issue. I think Senator Tony Laurie also has spoken recently about it. So I'm interested in the conversation, and I'm always interested in ways that we can better serve the people in Minnesota.
Okay. And this is kind of mushy, but can you talk a bit about your interests? I mean, a number of people asked me, and said, well, you know, your story didn't give me any sense of, you know, who you are. And I couldn't really find anything. I was just curious if you have any hobbies, anything you like to do in your free time that says something about you.
Mm-hmm. I have four little kids.
Okay.
9, 7, 5, and 2.
Okay.
And so most of my free time is...
What are their names, by the way?
Louie is my oldest.
Okay.
Alice is my second. Edward, we call him Eddie, is my third. And Helen is my baby. And Alice
Great.
And Helen are named after my two grandmothers.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm like every other working mom working outside of the home. I spend most of my time running kids to and from and doing laundry and picking, you know, stepping on Legos and all of that kind of good stuff. I coach my second grader Alice's basketball team, second grade basketball team. It's her first year playing basketball, but... the other girls have played for a couple years, so it's pretty, it's very entertaining. She's more interested in the social aspects of team sports right now than she is the competitive.
Well, all of that doesn't leave a whole lot of time for hobbies, I would think.
No,
right?
I like to, I'm trying to think, what do I do when I'm not...
Did you play basketball? Because you seem tall.
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, I played for De La Salle High School. I played actually... basketball, volleyball, and I started the girls' golf team with my little sister when I was a senior in high school and she was a freshman. We thought it was unfair that the boys had a golf team and the girls didn't. So my sister and I and a few of her friends started the girls' golf
team. At De La Salle?
At De La Salle.
Good for you.
But I played high school basketball. I have a
okay.
younger sister who was a very, very good college basketball player.
Okay.
She's a little taller than me. I like to water ski.
Okay.
what else do I like to do? I just enjoy spending time with my husband and my family. My kids are really involved in, you know, my oldest plays hockey and basketball, and so I really like watching him play basketball. And
sure.
I'm trying to figure out hockey, but it's a steep learning curve coming from a basketball family.
Yeah, no, I get that. And it's great to hear you play volleyball, because my kids are really into volleyball.
Volleyball is...
huge.
I'm a little nervous about volleyball for my kids, because I know how much anxiety watching a volleyball game caused my mom, because she said there's no other game where it can go from so good to so bad so quickly.
Yeah.
And she was not a person that liked a close game ever. In volleyball and like basketball, you get a good server and it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've witnessed this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some crazy swings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No, it definitely definitely creates a lot of anxiety at times.
Yeah. I mean, I've served on parks commissions before. I'm very passionate about our park system. I think we have one of the best park systems in the country, and it's one of the main reasons, one of the main recruiting tools I like to think of how businesses attract really strong national candidates for great positions is our park system. Certainly not our 6-month-long winters. So
not for the parks, I think this would be a cold Omaha.
Yeah.
No, the parks are huge. Well, that's super helpful. What's your husband's name?
Jeff.
Piper. Okay. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
You should know this. What does he do for?
He's a real estate agent and a firefighter for the city of Golden Valley.
Great.
And then he also works on occasion at the convention center. He bartends.
Okay. Do you have a favorite movie, book?
I'm
putting you on the spot. It wasn't on my list, so I apologize. If you don't have an answer, but I'm just curious.
A favorite movie. Well, I don't like any movies that are scary or sad that aren't true. So those are my two tests about. I only want to read a sad book or watch a sad movie if it's a true story, because I feel like there's no reason to be sad unless it's like actually based on a true, something that actually happened.
That's really interesting.
So
if it's sad and it's tragic, but it's not true.
Or not based on some truth, or it's just,
So you'll be okay with like the Shakespeare tragedies, because they're all basically based on like true people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of what my favorite movie of all time is. It's been so long since I've actually seen a movie. That's not a kid's movie. My kids and I watched The Goonies the other night, and I don't know that I'd ever seen that whole movie. And
it was so good.
It was really scary for Eddie.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking like about halfway in it, like maybe 5 is too little to watch The Goonies, but they were totally into it. So.
Yeah. So you want to go with The Goonies then? I'm just kidding.
the last movie I've seen is The Goonies.
Yeah.
There we go.
I don't know.
Cool.
Yeah. That was really not fair, because if anybody asked me what my favorite movie is, I wouldn't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought. Sometimes people just, you know, immediately, just like that. Or a favorite book, sometimes. Do you know?
I can't think.
Is there one? Probably not those books behind you.
Minnesota Statutes, yeah.
Yeah, what's not my favorite? Some obscure law that doesn't make
sense.
Well,
Emily, thank you.
This has
been great. I appreciate Matt helping out with this.
No problem.
So I think maybe...